This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box. Show content brought to you by the Bomberito Automotive Group. Go to bomberito.com. Search through their extensive inventory of new cars and pre-owned cars. They sell over 35,000 cars a year. That's amazing. They've won 8 straight state championships. That means they've sold the most cars in the state of Missouri for 8 straight years. That's amazing. 20 new car locations, 9 pre-owned car locations, and they're the proud sponsor of the Bomberito 500. That's going to be something special in August at Gateway Motorsports Park. The joint will be jumping. All these cars that you'll see at the Indy 500 coming up in a couple of weeks, you will see in St. Louis later that month. That is just spectacular. Racing has returned to St. Louis, and we want to thank the Bomberito Automotive family for that. All right, I would encourage everybody to pick up Sports Illustrated this week or somehow get online and read S.L. Price's pieces on Nick Bonacani and Jim Kick. S.L. joins us now. Good to be with you. How are you, sir?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Let's begin with Nick Bonacani. The caption, the headline kind of sums it up. I feel lost. I feel like a child. The complicated decline of Nick Bonacani. How did you find out about this, and why the story now?
Well, I had done a piece on Nick, well, not on Nick specifically, actually on Mark, his son, who had been paralyzed from the neck down after a terrible hit at the Citadel in the mid-'80s. And I did a story in 2009 about a cover story for SI on Mark and his reunion and work with helping out Herman Jacobs, who essentially was the running back that Mark hit when he became a quadriplegic in the accident. And I had lived in South Florida from 90 to 2000, so I knew the Bonacani family, knew of them, and knew them sort of distantly. And I met Nick and Mark for the first time then, and spoke to Nick then. In 2009, and the family reached out to me, and they liked that story. And Nick was having a very hard time trying to figure out what was wrong with him, and he really felt that overall that he has all these resources. Nick Bonacani is an incredibly accomplished businessman. I mean, he's had 4 great, incredible pinnacle careers since being a Hall of Fame football player, president of U.S. Tobacco, 23 years on HBO as a commentator, a sports agent for 38 athletes like Bucky Dent and Mickey Rivers, and then he's raised $450 million for spinal cord research with the Miami Project to cure paralysis. And so even he, and he's a fairly well-off man because of his accomplishments. Yet even he, with all his resources at hand and a loving wife, Lynn, who's charting his decline, is having difficulties trying to make his way through the thicket of both medical research and bureaucracies. And so Nick wanted to have that story told.
You have some tremendous quotes you got from Nick for this piece. Had I known, would I have played? I had no alternative. Football kept rewarding me. I can't deny that. What a dilemma that must be, knowing how dangerous it was, but the rewards were so incredible.
Well, I mean, I've gotten a little bit of response from people saying, well, these guys knew what they were getting into. Well, at that point in time, they really didn't. I mean, obviously, it was known as a brutal game. But we had no knowledge about brain trauma and concussions back in the 60s and 70s when Nick Bonacani started playing. And so, in many ways, this was Nick's steel mill. This was his coal mine. I mean, you know, and guys who went in there also knew of the physical disabilities they might suffer for the sake of, you know, having a job and a career and a steady life. So in many ways, football was that for Nick. And, you know, he even said, you know, everybody pays the piper. And, you know, had he known that it was this kind of price, you know, he later said on the video, no, he doesn't think he would play. But it's an unfair question in some ways because, let's face it, you know, he's a kid. He wants to go to college. This is his only way in. And, you know, this is how he felt he was going to make his way in the world. And it all proved true. His name was, you know, made by football. And his connections to business were made by football. His persona was made by football. So, you know, but it's the cost is profound. Now, the thing about Nick is, you know, he's 76 years old now, and you know he's not a classic case like Dave Duerson or Junior Seau. These young men who clearly something is wrong early on, and it descends on them in dramatic and horrible fashion. Nick had an incredible career, an incredible life, and part of my story with him, his search, is that it's complicated. I mean, you can't say for sure how much football has to do with his current situation. I mean, he says he took 500,000 hits. You know, nobody was keeping count, but that's 25 years of playing football. But you know, he's a 76-year-old man, and really the signs didn't show up until, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And so, you know, there's age-appropriate decline that we all know about, and that fogs up the picture as well. So it's a very difficult walk for these guys.
How foggy is his life right now, and do you get the impression he doesn't want to live?
No, when he said that, I think that was a spasm of real frustration and anger over that situation. I don't think Nick is built that way. His family, you know, he has a real fear of death. It's not something he embraces, in any way. I mean, it's a lifelong thing for him. It's hard for me to explain, but essentially, I don't think that's the situation. But it's funny. I saw Nick in November for the first time. And he got up in front of an audience in Pebble Beach, you know, and for 20 minutes I was with him, you know, in hallways and stuff, and, you know, people would come up out of nowhere, and he would remember them and recognize their name and remember their spouse, and then he got up on stage, and he was spectacular. You know, he was doing what he does, emceeing this event. A heckler came, you know, said something out of the crowd. He responded quickly, and you thought, boy, 75. I would take that at 75. He looked great. But then, you know, he teetered as he came off the stage. He was having he's in the midst of having all these falls. And part of it is that Nick has been trained because of HBO and all the speaking engagements he's done to get up and sort of bring his A game for those presentations. But as soon as the adrenaline drops, he at that point was having real troubles, and I saw him again in March, in April, and there had been a marked decline since November. I mean, he's really has trouble remembering and sustaining a conversation. There are times when he's incredibly on. I mean, it comes and goes. It's a very situational thing. I had great conversations with him about politics, for example, where he's, you know, bringing in references to MacArthur and Trump and so on and so forth. But then there's other times where he can't remember, he can't sustain a sentence for, you know, three sentences before it sort of exhausts him. There's a video that accompanies the story online of him in a very moving piece of Nick and Lynn. I would advise anyone to watch it because, you know, the wives and the spouses and the families are really the unsung heroes and the ones who bear the brunt of this as much as anybody, because, you know, they're watching the decline of their loved one and tracking it and have to pay attention, and it's an exhausting ordeal. Yeah. But also there is a display of Nick where he's attempting to get through sentences and he just can't. So it's an incredibly powerful piece.
S.L. Price joins us, Hollywood Casino Press Box. Frank Cusimano with you till 12. Then we move to Jim Kick. His quality of life seems to be even worse. To give our listening audience a little idea of how rough it has been for the former Miami Dolphins star running back.
Well, it's interesting because in some ways Jim's situation is the reverse of Nick. His search is over. I mean, he's now in assisted living. He's comfortable. He's good humored. He gets to go to the gym three times a week. And he's getting help from the 88 plan, the NFL plan, NFLPA jointly sponsored plan, $133,000 a year. His neurologist is convinced 99.9% that he has CTE and dementia with Alzheimer's, but they know what they're dealing with. He says he has holes in his brain, his neurologist, about Jim Kick. Nick's situation is much more of a search that probably won't be resolved nearly as emphatically. However, I mean, that was July of last year that Jim was put into assisted living. Prior to that, his family had, I mean, he was living, he's the opposite of Nick. He was living alone. He didn't have a wife or a partner living with him. His son, Austin, at the age of 21, 22, was sort of thrown into being his father's main caregiver while trying to get his own life underway as an adult. And, you know, trying to navigate the shoals of health care and player care. And he had no sense and no understanding of what NFL programs were there for him at his disposal. And it took years, really, from the beginning of Jim's, when he began to present signs, before the family really could understand it. His ex-wife, Mary, is remarried, so she wasn't involved with Jim every day, but she actually really, really generously helped, and obviously we're helping his kids. Jim's other child is Allie Kick, who's a professional tennis player. But by the end, they were getting mailings from the NFL, but they were buried in what was a really messy, to say the least, apartment that Jim had in South Florida. And eventually, health officials said, he can't live here anymore. He can't live on his own. And that's why they ended up in assisted living. But it was a classic case of a guy who's not on the web, who's not tech savvy, who's living alone, so and is really declining. Austin, his son, would bring medicine and notice have little slots of medicine every day. You take this pill, and he'd go there the next day, and 3 days of medicine was gone. He would just be popping Advil like crazy, and Austin would take away the Advil container, and the next day Jim would have gone out and gotten another bottle of Advil, and so just forgetting what he had eaten, forgetting that he had taken it, not being monitored, and so that's a nightmare, of course, for the body and a nightmare for the family.
I did not see in your article about Jim Kick about if any of his former teammates, particularly Larry Zonka, does he live in the area and has he tried to help Jim? Because when you think about Jim Kick, you think about Larry Zonka, number 39, right next to him.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're all very supportive. I mean, Zonk does not live in the area. He lives up in the north, Alaska, I believe, or at least he's up there quite a bit. Mercury Morris has been there to visit him. And, now, and the players want to visit him. They do want to visit him. They do want to support him. The problem is that up until June, July of last year, a lot of players don't know. They fall out of touch with each other, and they're not as connected as people who are younger in many ways. And I don't think there was any kind of negligence on the part of his teammates in any way. It's more like people just fall through the cracks. and he's not equipped to say, hey, what's going on here? You know, so it's a very human and understandable sort of slip through. But I would, at this point, Jim's, I feel in a good place.
Before we let you go, do you believe that, you know, these articles, which will be read all over the country, and we have so many of the other stories, do you believe that it's going to play a large role in the decline or the interest level in the NFL?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I can't predict. I think it will among middle class. Yeah, I think it will among the middle class. I just wrote a book about Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, a steel town outside of Pittsburgh, that produced Mike Ditka, Darrell Revis, Ty Law, all these incredible players. But it's been brutalized by the end of the steel industry, and football is in many ways the replacement for the steel industry. It's the way out. It's the way to get scholarships, and the team remains incredible. And I was there the last 6 years, and when it came to youth teams, there are four levels of youth teams, and all four of them, the roster was stocked with 40 players, and there was a waiting list. And I never heard a word about, you know, concussion or worry from parents there, because this was, again, the way out. This is the route to survival in this society for them there, at least it's viewed that way. And so for people who don't feel they have a choice, I think it's like boxing. I think football will become like boxing. I think that the lower classes, especially those who are on the edge economically, will still pour into the game, because obviously the riches are there if you pay the price. But for middle class parents especially who have a choice, you know, what parent, you put your kid in a car seat, you childproof your house. What parent is going to think, you know what, I think my kid should play football, knowing this danger, when they can play soccer, lacrosse, you know, basketball, any other number of things, still get their competitive juices going, still get the great benefits of team, and you know, the lessons from losing and winning. And I just feel like people who have a choice will end up making a choice away from football. But you're always, I believe, going to have this game, and it's always going to be attractive to us in many ways, because of it's a way out.
SL, great stuff. We appreciate your time today. We encourage everybody to go to SI.com and read about Jim Kick and Nick Bonacani. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right. We'll take a short time out. This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Get those texts in right away, and we'll give out our Communicator of the Day Award winner when we come back.